Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Many women feel powerless when it comes to their cars. Mechanics speak a foreign language, and the repair bill contains unnecessary and overpriced repairs. Regular maintenance can extend the longevity of your car. Girls Auto Clinic, Glovebox Guide by Patrice Banks, released in September 2017, is a one-stop, do-it-herself guide to auto maintenance, repairs, and roadside emergencies. Author Patrice Banks took her engineering degree and became a certified automotive technician, giving auto workshops to women and girls all across Philadelphia and starting an all-female garage. Patrice joins 411 Teen on the phone. Patrice?
Hello, thank you.
I'm glad to have you joining me here at the table. I have students who are also very interested in hearing what you may have to say. Okay, about maintenance. Joining me, I have Carson Fletcher. She's a student at Sale High School. She's a senior, and juggling and art is her thing. She plans to attend Florida State upon graduation.
Hey there, how you doing?
Glad to have you. Anna Campbell, Sale High School, senior, student government, traveling, and art.
Hi, it's so nice to be here.
Inquiry Warren. She attends Florida State Developmental School. She is a junior, and she is into dance and SGA.
Thanks for having me.
And Cameron Brown, junior, FSU Developmental School, art, SGA, engineering, journalism. All those things are her thing.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm really glad to have you. Well, Patrice, wow. First of all, I applaud you. I mean, you're just a phenomenal woman. As I understand it, kudos to all the arenas. You were first to buy a house and first to own a car in your family. You talk about how your mother walked to work every day because she could not afford a car. Share your story with us. I mean, I read your book and I just loved it, as you probably can tell. But share your story with the listening audience.
Well, you know, I tell people that my whole life I've been preparing for this and where I'm at today, because I recognize, looking back, going through some of the hardships that we did growing up. I grew up poor. It was just me and my mother. I'm biracial. My mom is white. My dad is black, but my dad wasn't never around. So, and my mom wasn't an empowered woman. She wasn't educated, didn't have a high school diploma. I think she had her GED. And she always worked kind of blue-collar jobs when she was young and had to walk to work. She wasn't really good with money. She was even more horrible with men in relationships. And, you know, we struggled. I struggled as a kid. I experienced physical abuse and sexual abuse, me and my sister did, growing up. So, you know, things were rough. And I was one of those kids that wanted to get out. I always knew that there was something else out there for me in life. I always knew I was capable of doing anything that I dreamed of. I was kind of I don't like to say tomboy. I was just a girl who saw guys doing stuff, and it didn't stop me from doing it. I wanted to show that women could do it. But one of the first sports that I wanted to play was soccer, and it was because I saw not girls playing soccer on TV, but boys. I thought, I want to play soccer. Always wanting to show, like, look, girls, we can do it. We can compete with the guys, you know, wanting to prove myself to the guys and just kind of always trying to get out, right, out of my experiences that I was in. And that's kind of what saved me, was looking for things to do outside of the home that were positive. Joining sports and activities in school. I was a nerd. I was made fun of because I was a nerd. But listen, being a nerd is cool, man. This is what gets you where you're supposed to be in your 20s and 30s. They made fun of me all the time because I loved to read and I was in the library, you know. And now it's, oh, we always knew you'd make it, you know. So I had these experiences as a kid that were bad, but I was able to channel that energy into other positive things for myself. Unfortunately, my sister was not, and so she's only 1 year older than me, and she struggled very much in life, never graduated high school, 4 kids, you know, and she's got issues with their fathers being in jail and a lot of behavioral issues with the children, you know, so it made a difference, the choices that I was making when I was a teenager and even before.
Well, you're
putting
phenomenal.
That energy into positive things, yeah.
You
so,
are a phenomenal woman, and we applaud you. And we
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate you taking the time to share your experiences with us, okay?
Yeah. What? Thank you.
Tell us about basic, you know, automobile maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where do we start?
Where do I even get to that? Well, so, yeah, you know, this is my story, and I didn't have nothing to do with cars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And which is funny because I get into automotive. I did drive a car, but I don't know anything about how to take care of my car, right, maintenance and repairs. So I called myself an auto airhead. And even as an engineer, I'm an empowered woman. I work for DuPont, and so I decided to look for a woman. I knew that this was something women should know about. I don't know why it's typical that we think we need a man. That's how I felt. I need a man to help me. That's not very empowered. So I started looking for a female mechanic so I could learn of myself and I could help other women. I was going to share what I learned. And I couldn't find a female mechanic. I started looking for resources online. I couldn't find resources online. So I decided I was going to go back to school to learn how to work on cars, to see what all of the hoopla was about, right? What are they saying that girls aren't going to get this, or what's so difficult for me to understand? And I realized it wasn't difficult when I started learning some of the basic things and the core principles of how cars work, so we know how to take care of them and make better choices with our cars and not waste a lot of money and time on them like I did as an auto airhead.
Well, share with us, what are the core principles for auto maintenance and how we maintain our car?
One thing that everyone should know, and the most important decision that you'll ever make, is the type of car you buy. You know, you want to think about not just what looks good and what feels good, but also your driving habits. Do you beat a car up? You know, are you really rough on a car? Or you kind of drive more cautiously. I'm kind of rough on the car. I drive like I'm in the city. Do you drive in the city versus driving on the highway? Do you save money? You know, and do you put money aside for repairs? If you know you're someone who's good at that, you're able to afford some of the nicer cars that are more luxury. But if you're someone who beats up a car and you don't, you're not good with saving money to fix your car, you want to get a car that's going to be one that's durable and that you can beat up so you're not spending a ton of money later down the line on it because you weren't taking better care of it before. So it really depends on the relationship you have with your car and how much you know about it. So I talk a lot in the book about how to change the relationship you have with your car so you know how to take care of it and the type of and buy the right car for you. So when you have it, the most important thing that you do is get your oil changed when it's due. That is the most important thing that you can do when you have your car. And often women, because we're afraid to go into the auto repair shop or we're afraid to, because we're going to be upsold and we don't know when to go in, we always go over that time. It says, oh, 5,000 miles between oil changes on your car. But we'll wait till it says 5,792 or, you know, 6,105. But that's supposed to be 4,999 or less.
Mm-hmm.
Get your oil changed. It's very important that we do that for the longevity of your car. You know, cars will last a long time. You can get really good, durable cars that'll go 300,000 miles if you take care of the things that you're supposed to, like getting your oil changed.
So oil is important. What about someone who's going to investigate a pre-owned vehicle? Any types of, what kinds of things should they look for?
Yeah, so I really break this down nicely in the book to talk about to buy a used vehicle and you don't need a man to help you. And what you're really looking for every step of the way, from the interior to how it feels when you drive, how it feels when you brake, you know, how it feels when you're on the highway, when you're turning. But the most important thing is you want to look for some of the basics, is like, does it have new tires? Does it have a new battery? Has the oil been changed and all the fluids are fresh? And is it pretty clean? You know, a car that has that is one that people are going to have taken care of and that they're looking to really sell for a value. I can't tell you how many times I see people buy a used car and it doesn't have a new battery in it. And a battery mm-hmm. is something that a shop can get for really cheap, right? Somebody who really cares about selling the car and that they kept up with it and make sure it's a good car for someone is going to replace the battery before they sell it. They're going to do the brakes. They're going to do those tires. They want the car to look the best. So look for those types of cars. And if they don't have them on there, take it off the price of the vehicle, because you're going to have to do it as soon as you get it. So the book teaches you all these things that you need to know about when you want to buy a used car and what's really important and that should be on there. And so what are some non-negotiables, right? Definitely don't buy a car if this is a problem. If you see this as a problem, tell them to fix it or drop the price off of it, you know, or don't worry about this. That's not a problem. So it breaks it down really easy on what's important. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that, because I always used to hear if you buy a pre-owned car that you're buying someone else's headaches. And so what you're saying is ideally you really can select a car that will work for you that may have been pre-owned, but there are just certain characteristics and variables that one has to check out to make sure that this is the car for you.
Exactly. And one of the things that you do want is, when I say show me your receipts, mm-hmm. is someone who's taking care of a car will keep their receipts of when they've done the maintenance. That's going to be the best way to sell your car quickly and for a really good price. So if you have a car now, keep your receipts or make sure that you take it to a shop that saves them for you. So you can come back and go to that shop all the time. So you can go, if you ever want to resell your car for a good value, that's going to be the best value that you can put on it, is saving those receipts to show to someone. And say, hey, it's not really as big a headache to take this car. It was taken care of.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, I am talking with Patrice Banks. I have four students here, two from Sale and two from Florida High, and they are going to ask some questions once we get started after the break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I have Patrice Banks online. She is engineer turned certified auto mechanic, and she's sharing her expertise about car maintenance. Patrice, before we went on break, I had asked you to differentiate between the private mechanic and a dealership, and which one would be the better for maintenance.
Right. So it really, there isn't one to say this would be the better one.
Mm-hmm.
It really just depends on you and what's the best fit for you. So that's why I kind of break down the pros and the cons. So going to a dealership, obviously, it has the trusted name. At a dealership, it's a lot of times somebody from your community that you know. You bought the car from there, so you know the people, and they give you a lot of specials. They do the bells and whistles. You know, they can wash the car and vacuum it a lot of times. They'll give you top-notch service. And when you take your car in, of course, the lobbies are incredibly clean and have tons of great food and everything. but they can be very expensive at dealerships. You go to a mom-and-pop shop, it's not going to have all those bells and whistles and you know, cars that give you courtesy shuttles and things like that, but they're not as expensive. So if those things don't matter to you, if you don't plan on hanging out around there, if it doesn't matter how dirty the shop is, and you find a mom-and-pop shop that you like, it's fine to take it there. I wouldn't say there's better mechanics at either one. There's good mm-hmm. mechanics at both of them. It's really about your preference of service and atmosphere.
Okay.
And finding the right place for you. And so there's a whole chapter in there on how to find your, what I call your PCP, your primary care technician. We have PCPs, primary care physicians, but often we do something I call shop hop or cheating on our cars by taking them around to different mechanics instead of going to the same mechanic every time. You want to find your PCT and take your car to them, and that could be someone at the dealership. You know, it could be a mom-and-pop shop. It could be a chain like a Pep Boys or a Midas. It's just about finding the one that you're comfortable with and getting to know them. It's just really important because this is a service. It's a service being provided, not just for your car, but for you. And for women, that's what we want. We want to feel comfortable with the choices that we make with our car and know that the money that we're spending is going to the right things.
Are there maintenance items that we can maintain ourselves?
So certain things, yeah, your battery, if there's corrosion on your battery, you know, one of the things they say, you'll see these green or white deposits, pour Coke on them, and that will get rid of the battery corrosion. Just maintaining them by checking your fluids, making sure that they're at their full levels, except for your brake fluid. If your brake fluid's low, it's an indication that you need brakes. But the rest of your fluids you can check. There's ones that I say don't touch in the book. If you see that they're low and it says don't touch, that means there's an issue. Get it checked out. There's other ones that you can touch that if they're low, you can fill them up. So a lot of it is just checking your fluids to make sure that they're there and they're serving the purpose. Don't be afraid to lift up that hood and get underneath and see what's underneath the car and what you can see and touch. And I talk about that in one chapter in the book. So you'll learn what are the things that are going to be important, especially if you're going on long trips. Your oil and your coolant are the lifelines of your engine, and you want to make sure that you're checking those fluids, and your tire pressures are very important. Maintaining the air pressure in your tires is going to help with gas mileage, but also the longevity of your tires. Tires are very expensive, and you'll wear them out quicker if you're not maintaining them properly.
As far as the maintenance of the tires, should you adhere to the stats and information that is on the tire as far as pressure is concerned? Or does the weather influence the tire pressure as far, I mean, when it's warm versus cold?
So, yeah, so you do not want to add the air pressure that is printed on the side of the tire. That's the maximum allowable air pressure in the tire before it becomes unsafe. If you keep adding air in, it could break or blow. The average pressure that's supposed to go in a tire is 33 PSI, but you can find the correct pressure on a sticker that's on the inside of the driver's side door or the door sill. You'll see a sticker on there. It will say, like, tire loading and pressure information. Mm-hmm. But it's somewhere between 30 and 35 for most cars. And so we say the average is 33. And you want to make sure that's the air pressure that you're putting in your tires.
Okay. You ladies have questions. Yes, go right ahead.
So what is something that we should always keep in our car in case of emergencies with something going on with our car?
Okay, so besides the glove box, guys, because that's the purpose of it, to keep it in your glove box, you want to make sure you have your proper paperwork and information just in case you get pulled over, that you have that on with you. Nowadays, you can pull all that stuff up on your phone, so it's very important that you have your phone and you have a charger to charge it up, or that it is charged, maybe one of those extra portable ones in case you run out of battery, in case the car does break down. And you don't have any electricity on in the car, the car's not running, there's no electricity on the car, and it's all pulling it from the battery. If the battery dies, that's it. And so you want to make sure that your cell phone's lasting long in case you're stuck somewhere. So definitely keep one of those extra portable cell phone batteries. A pen and pad to write things down is nice to always have in your car. And especially if you have a used car with over 100,000 miles on it, keep some fluids in the trunk with a yellow cone in case you do break down, to put out behind the car to warn drivers. Keep some coolant in there and some oil and some water in there if the car has over 100,000 miles. Every car will leak oil eventually. Every car is going to overheat or have some type of issue where you're going to need to pull to the side, check the fluids, and know what to put in there, especially ones that are over 100,000 miles. So that's when you want to be paying attention. And it's not hard. This is stuff that we can do and learn. It's little small things like, oh, let me check my oil and fill it up. Or if it is starting to overheat, what to do so you're not causing more damage. I see people that make really horrible mistakes that would have cost maybe $75 to $100 to fix, but they damaged their entire car because they didn't pull over when they should have or take their car to the mechanic when they should have because they didn't know what to do when their car was leaking oil or coolant.
Other questions?
Good question. Thank you.
As far as oil, I know that there are several different types, and every time I get my oil changed, they always ask me, you know, which one I want. I never know the right answer. I drive a hybrid car, so I know mm-hmm. that some things are different on it, but what mm-hmm. is the best oil to be putting into my car?
Well, I would feel the same way. So, like, one of those quick loop places, and they say, well, what kind of oil do you want in your car? I'm like, I don't know. Isn't that something you should know? And so I compare it to, you know, a manicure. So you have your conventional oil. We'll just talk right now about the conventional oil and synthetic oil. And so a conventional oil is kind of like a regular manicure. It costs you maybe $10 to $15. It's only going to last a couple of days, though. The paint will start chipping on it. But if you get a gel manicure, it's maybe three times the price, but it's going to last you about 2 weeks. That's what a synthetic oil change is. Synthetic oil changes will last longer between oils before you have to replace your oil. But it's not necessary if your car does not require it. It is not necessary. You don't have to put it in. You do have to put it in on certain cars like hybrids or luxury vehicles like Lexuses or Mercedes and BMWs. They require synthetic. If your car doesn't require it, you don't need to have it, okay? But you may want to put it in because you can go longer between oil changes. So if you know you're someone who beats up a car and you don't go and get your oil changes when they're due, I would get synthetic oil changes in your car to better protect your engine. And then you don't have to come back as much for your oil changes because you can extend them. And so that's the difference between the two. You don't have to get it. It's not required. You have a hybrid. I think yours might be. And then they have one that's called a synthetic blend, which is just a mix of the conventional and the gel. So it's kind of like one that doesn't last the 2 weeks, a manicure that only lasts like a week, something like that. It's a mix. And they usually tell you to get a synthetic blend or a high miles oil change when the car has a lot of miles on it, over 100,000, because it will leak oil eventually. You can do that if you want, right? But if you're keeping up and checking your oil like the book tells you to, if your car is over 100,000 miles, you're changing your oil every month, you don't need to spend money on these extra things because you know how to keep up with your car and when the oil changes itself. If you're not good at keeping up with that stuff, yeah, pay a couple extra dollars to get it done. Did that answer your question? Does that make sense?
Yes. Definitely. Thank you.
Do you all have any questions?
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, if you don't, I have a question. First of all, may I ask you what you drive?
I have two cars, a 2010 Volkswagen Jetta, and I also drive a 2007 Chevy Impala, which is like our shop car.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been driving that one around because the Jetta's in the shop.
Okay. Tell us about your garage. I mean, I think I read that it also has an accompanying nail and hair salon, right?
Yes.
Tell us about it. Where is it?
So, you know, when I was working as an engineer, I used to go to this specific quick loop place because there was a nail salon next to it. Me and my girlfriend would drop off our cars at the quick loop, and we'd go next door and get our nails done. And we thought we were so smart, killing two birds with one stone, right? And so when I opened the shop, because I knew I wanted to have a place that women could come bring their car that I would want to go to. I knew I wasn't going to be taken advantage of. I wanted to hire female mechanics because I knew we could trust them. But then I was like, we have to add a nail salon there, right? Because women look forward to getting their nails done. We don't really look forward to bringing our cars in. But if we're like, hey, I'm going to go get my nails done today, I'm going to go get my oil changed, right? We're feeling better about it. And so I added the nail salon, and everybody loves it. It's like the cherry on top on the fact that you have a shop that does all the full-service auto repair and maintenance that caters to women, and you have all female mechanics, and there's a nail salon. Everyone's like, wow, this is incredible. And we're the only business like this in the United States. You know,
wow.
So we're getting a lot of attention all over the country. And, you know, I was in Oprah's magazine and I've won business competitions with Damon John from Shark Tank and, you know, NBC and CBS. And we were just on Good Morning America and the 700 Club and all these other really incredible big press, you know, mm-hmm. everyone's loving what we're doing. So We hope to start expanding these repair centers, and we want to reach as many women as possible. My goal is to reach every woman driver. She needs to understand her car, how to take care of it, how to make good choices with her car, because, ladies, the future is female. And, you know, we are the number one customer in the automotive industry, but less than 2% are mechanics, less than 7% sell cars, and even less are engineers and designers. So even though we're the number one customer in this industry, we are not involved in making decisions or being a part of creating things or being in positions of influence or power. And I want to change that with Girls Auto Clinic by hiring women, by creating opportunities for them to be in the automotive industry. And we do that through, you know, through the repair centers and teaching other women and turning them from auto airheads to what I call she-canics, which are my car savvy ladies. So, yeah, I'm really excited to, you know, do more work and get out there.
Where physically is your garage located?
So I'm in Philadelphia, PA.
I know.
That's where I'm from. Mm-hmm. It's actually right outside of Philly, about one block from the city. A place called Upper Darby, but don't nobody know Upper Darby, so I just say Philly.
Well, I'm going to be
right
in
there.
Philly.
I live in Philly. I'm home right now. My house in Philly.
Oh, I'm going to be in Philly next week, in fact. So I might just give you a call. I'd love to see your shop, you know?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, well, I will give you a call and we'll see what we can arrange.
Yes, we are closed on Thanksgiving and the day after, but we're open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Sunday. And the salon is gorgeous. You'll love it. Everybody has loved it.
You're
designed really nicely.
You're open on Sunday, too, huh?
Not Sunday.
Okay.
No.
Does anybody else have any questions? Go right ahead.
Before you got your license to be an automotive technician, what did you know how to do on your car?
Not much. Messing up a lot. I was afraid of my car. Any light would pop on, and I would be like, oh, please go on. I cross my fingers and hope it go off when I turn the car back off. If something was making a funny noise, I'd cringe, and I wouldn't want to look under the hood. You know, I could put air in my tires, and that was about it. And I wasn't even comfortable with that. And you did ask me a question about temperature and how that affects it. So when it gets really cold quickly, like it's overnight when it gets cold, the air, you guys know from physics or science, that when air gets cold, it compresses or contracts. And so the pressure will go down. So first thing in the morning when it's cold, you turn your car on, your tire pressure level will probably be on because it thinks that it's lost pressure because the air contracted. But as soon as you start driving, like 1 to 2 miles, the air will warm up, it'll start expanding again, and the pressure will go up, and then the light will go off. If it doesn't go off after you've driven about 2 or 3 miles, you probably do need to put air in your tire. But anyway, so that's all I knew how to do, really, was to put air in my tire. I mean, I was really great at parallel parking, though. I'm a beast at parallel parking because I live in the city. And I drive, you know, I drive pretty good, pretty aggressively. But I didn't take care of my car, and I'd have people yelling at me and shaming me for doing the wrong things with my car, not taking care of it well. And I used to think, well, whatever, I'm an engineer, I have enough money, I'll buy a new car. I made so many mistakes and lost so much money by doing that. But I learned, right? This was me. Like I said, I've been preparing my whole life for this.
Okay.
Everything that I could do bad with a car, I learned. And that's why I'm able to teach other people and not shame them and not make them feel bad about it. And that's what women need. They need to feel good about the choices that they make. And so it put me in the position to create a company like this. And so I'm grateful for those experiences, even though they cost me a lot of money.
And Karine.
I was going to ask about some common, like, misconceptions. So I have, like, this brand new car. Bless my parents' hearts. but my dad still is like, turn on the car when it's cold to heat it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that, like, a real thing? And then also the other one is, like, it takes more gas to turn off your car and turn it back on than it is to just leave it running for, like, a couple minutes.
Okay, I love it. Yeah, a little quiz in the front of the book. Like I say, this is the truth about cars and what men think that they know. And say, well, no, my husband said this, and my dad said this, my brother said I have to do this. You do not have to warm up your car in the morning when it's cold out. And I have a little meme that goes with my tip with that, the woman that says, ain't nobody got time for that. Because cars since 1993, they've been fuel injected, even which that is a rule for carbureted cars. Those are like the classic cars now. We don't really drive those around every day, especially if it's cold. So if you have a car that's made from 1993 or newer, that no longer applies. So you can save that time by sleeping more, hitting snooze one more time, dreaming in the shower for 5 more minutes. You don't need to warm your car. But do not take off like, you know, you're Jeff Gordon. You want to slow warm your car up while you're driving. Okay. And the other one was, what was the other one?
Does it
say gas? Turning the car on and off. Okay. So that is sort of correct. I'm going to say that's partially correct. You can be doing a lot more, not for the gas turning the car off, but for the starter. Every time you start something up versus turning it off, it's a lot of load onto a car, onto a computer, onto anything that, you know, has a start and a stop that's not continuous. I don't know if you know this, if you keep your computers running all the time, or your phones, right? It's a big deal when your phone starts up. When your phone shuts down, it takes like, because it died, it takes like 4% juice before it even turns on again. Like, it needs that much juice just to get it to turn on. And that's the same for a car. So every time you turn a car on and off, you're putting a big load, not really on the gas, on the battery, on the alternator, on your starter, right, on the engine. And not turning it off is putting another load on it to stop it.
We're going to take a brief break. You're tuned into 411 Teen, and we're getting Car Maintenance 101 with Patrice Banks.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
Patrice, sometimes one may hear odd sounds coming from the vehicle that they're driving. At what point do they know they need to take it in? Or the car drives fine, but you're just hearing a little rattle or a clank, clank. There's no lights on. What do you advise one do?
To take it in. Anytime your car's communicating with you all the time and we want to ignore it. Anytime you hear something out of the ordinary or feel something or smell something out of the ordinary, take it into your mechanic. It could be something small, but it could also be something major that you're causing more damage to. So don't wait.
Okay. Any other questions? Considering buying a car, you like both of them. You like manual and you like automatic transmission. There are plus or minuses to it, and I have to admit I'm biased. I love a manual transmission, but I do. But is there any advantage or disadvantage to one or the other?
There's always an advantage to the manual just because it's going to be better for you in the snow, right? And you can start it without, the battery or gas sometimes. So there's advantages to it if you're kind of a MacGyver and you know what you're doing. Most people don't even know how to drive stick. You have to special order.
I know. I know.
Yeah,
and then you're afraid to take it. You're afraid to park it because you wonder if the parking attendants know how to drive it. But I mean, there's nothing like a manual transmission.
Okay. Yeah, there isn't. It's a lost skill, and it's becoming as an art now because so few people know how to do it. But I hope they stick around and maybe they'll make a comeback.
Let's
hope. Bring them back, girls. You guys are good.
I do have another question for you. As someone who drives in both cold and hot weather, because I'm driving between, you know, northern states and coming back down to Florida, what do you suggest in terms of, like, car maintenance and things that I need to specifically be looking at just to make sure that I'm not going to break down at any point?
Mm-hmm. So one thing you want to be looking at, I would put synthetic oil in my car if you're doing a lot of extreme driving like that and going from hot to cold, is to put in synthetic oil. You want to make sure that you check your coolant. Anytime you're going on a trip longer than 2 hours, check your oil, check your coolant. Make sure that you know how to check your tire pressure and check your pressure regularly, even though now we've got those lights that come on the dashboard that tell us, you know, that's really important. And things like your wipers, you know, making sure that they're in good shape if you get the cold weather and it all of a sudden starts snowing or raining. You need to be able to see, you know, in front of you. So it's nothing really more different, except you want to consider yourself a severe driver. You're going to be doing more work on your battery and your tires and your engine. So synthetic oil, check your batteries, check your tires.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
What are some red flags to look for when buying a used car?
Some things, like I mentioned earlier, if it doesn't have new tires or a new battery or new brakes or new fluids, that's usually a red flag that I wouldn't buy it. Check the oil. If it's dark with black specks in it, that's an indication the engine wasn't taken care of. Mm-hmm. Don't buy that car.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people will drive their car until it's below E. I think females are real guilty of doing that. Would you comment on that?
Yes. So that was me.
Oh, okay.
And I still do that. That's my auto airhead habit that dies hard, you know. But so you have your gas tank. You know, you put gas in the back of the car where you fill up, because the tank that stores all your gas is in the back, underneath the back seat. It needs to get to the engine. So what do they have? They have a pump that pumps it up to the front of the car and sets it on fire inside the engine. That as you get lower and lower in gas, that level is going to drop, and that pump has to work harder to get the fluid up into the front of the engine as it gets lower and lower in that tank. And so you wear out your pump. One day you'll come out and you'll turn the key and the car won't start. That's because your fuel pump is dead and it's not pumping up any more fuel. So you want to try to keep it on a quarter of a tank at all times, and that'll help make sure that the pump doesn't work as hard to get that fuel up to the front of the engine.
Questions?
Whoops. I definitely
You don't
right?
do that.
I definitely get to the gas station and it says 5 miles left.
I know. Oh, my car has the low gas light on
funny.
Right now.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. I drive to New Jersey because it's full serve, and they pump your gas for you just to get gas. I hate to get gas. I'm always waiting until my light turns on, and I'm horrible. But don't worry. I do it, too.
I'm in the process of looking for a car, and if I go through all of its history and I see that it got in an accident years ago and the owner still kept up with it and they just got rid of it, should I still just stay away from it because it got in an accident, or should I look more into it?
If you find a car that you buy because it got into an accident, it's a huge, huge discount. That's the only way you're buying it. And so you'll see people that have these almost new cars, like a 2014 and it was $10,000. It's because it was in an accident. So that's the only reason people would buy a car that was in an accident. You can find a car for a good price that wasn't in an accident. You know, and so if you're somebody who doesn't really care about that and maybe just wanted to look have a newer car that with less miles on it, it's going to have problems. Every car that's been in an accident is going to have more problems. It just never goes back together again. Nothing does when it breaks. So you're going to run into some issues. You can deal with them, but it's going to be a pain in the butt, and the mechanic's going to be frustrated. It's a frustrating process. So I would stay away from it.
Okay, thank you.
What about fuel and oil additives? How efficient are they?
Not too much. They're not too much efficient. You're going to have to use them a lot. You can do fuel injector cleaning at a mechanic, which is a lot more efficient. It's going to be maybe like $106, but it'll really clean your fuel injectors. You only need to do it once a year. Same thing with your oil and other flushes. The flushes that we can do that are going to be better than stuff that you can just put in your car. These additives are short-term fixes. They're still going to not fix a long-term problem.
Question?
Yes. Yeah. So I think we've all been through that situation where we're running a little late to school and we may or may not hit a curb on our turn. What exactly will that do to your tires?
I'm loving these questions, lady. Yes, yes, girl. So I do this all the time. I live in the city and we parallel park, and it's like, oh. yeah. I mean, it really just depends. You can scratch up a hubcap, which is why what I do. I don't have any hubcaps on my car anymore, and I live like a cop car. you could actually do damage to the tire, and it may cause a leak. You'll come back to the car after you've had it parked there for a while, and it'll have a flat. Mm-hmm. And you may have to get it towed somewhere and put your spare on it. If it's a really bad hit. And if it's really, really bad where you're kind of going fast, you're not just like parking, but you're actually on the gas, you could do some damage to knock the car out of alignment and need some suspension work or need a realignment. And if you need a realignment on a car, your tires are going to wear out really quickly. So definitely get that done.
Are there any particular brands that you recommend? I mean, I think of like Subaru, that's really known for being very efficient and having a lot of safety factors and features with it. Can you recommend three or four car manufacturers that, you know, basically make a good, solid car? Now, I know it would depend on the model and whatever, you know, but... For example, you know, Jaguars, people love Jaguars, but Jaguar is a horrible car. Are they getting any better?
No. They're not really around. They're not really making Jaguars like that. Mm-hmm. Your solid car is obviously it's the Toyota. Everyone knows that that's the staple of the car that's just going to last a really long time because of their manufacturing processes and how effective and efficient and lean they are. They're great, right? But you could also get, you know, there's certain cars that are Ford or Chevy that will last you a really long time. It's about how you take care of them. If you know you're someone who wants a car that goes 300 miles, Toyotas and Volvos usually do really well. If you want a luxury car that's not as expensive for repairs, Lexuses are the cheapest luxury cars. So, you know, I would get one of those if you're thinking more of the luxury. Reminder, though, that you're going to have to spend more on maintenance on luxury cars because they require things like synthetic oil. So I would really say, like, if you beat up a car, right, go with a Hyundai or go with a Kia because they have the best warranty, 10 years and 100,000 miles, right? So you'll know that the car will be taken care of if anything crazy happens to it. So, like, again, it really just depends on how you drive and what you intend to use the car for, how long you plan on keeping it. That's going to determine, like, what type of car you should get. But some people just have brand loyalty. They always want to get Toyota because that's what they like.
So I was going
to... But I don't have loyalty to any brand. I've had one of, like, every car. I've had one of every car so far. It's the Dodge. I haven't had a Dodge yet.
Get a Charger.
I had a question. So this is kind of might be a personality thing, and you might not know the answer other than be a better driver, but I'm one of the, like, I like to drive really fast, and, like, it's probably not a great thing, and I'm not really careful with my car, but...
Mm-hmm. And you just have a new car?
It's awful. Like, the other day, I pulled up to a mailbox, and I was like, if I open this door and it hits the mailbox, my car isn't going to dent. Like, my car can handle it. It didn't. There's a tiny little scratch on my car. Please don't let my dad hear this. But, I don't know. Do you have any tips on just taking better care of your car in general, other than safe, I guess?
Well, listen, just because you drive that way doesn't mean you're not taking better care of your car. Get a car that can handle that. This doesn't sound like you're somebody who's not a better driver. It sounds like you need to be driving like a V6 or that can handle you driving like this, you know, and maybe you start out with one that's a little bit older so you can beat it up a little bit to learn on it. You know what I mean? I'm not sounding like this is something you should stop doing. This sounds like, that's incredible, yeah. Explore this a little bit more. But don't do it on a car that you can't afford, you know, you don't want to do on a car.
I mean, I have a 2017 RAV4 Toyota right now, so.
Oh, perfect. I was going to say, you know, that's the one I recommend.
Oh, that's so funny. That is so funny.
Yeah,
that
they can take a beating. So you're good.
Awesome.
Patrice, share with us, how does the engine actually work?
Yeah, so I compare the engine to kind of like there's a four-stroke cycle, they call it, but that can be confusing. So I kind of compare it to like eating your stomach. Your engine is like eating gas and fuel. It sets it on fire, and then it burps it out with your exhaust. Mm-hmm. Right, and that's the cycle that keeps happening. The engine, that's what you need to know, is how your engine works. These mini explosions happening that make your car go. It's going to suck in air and fuel, right, eat the air and fuel, burn it, and then burp it out to the exhaust. And that's really how an engine works. And you need to know that your engine needs oil and coolant to do that. It's that eat, belch, burn cycle that's happening really, really quickly, right, very fast, fast-moving parts inside of your engine. You need oil to lubricate. You need coolant to keep it cool. Many explosions at hot 4,000 degrees, your engine would melt. So you have coolant that's wrapped around the engine to make sure it stays at a right temperature. So that's all you need to know about your engine. And that little spark that sets it on fire is your spark plug. A spark plug is like a lighter. It just causes a little spark. That's what makes these cars go. Little mini explosions.
Well, how
like
important
you see
is
in
it
the movies.
To have, what about horsepower? What is it, and how important, what should you look for?
You should not be worried about horsepower unless you're the girl who likes to drive kind of crazy, she says. because horsepower is really about how fast the car is going to accelerate, how much power the engine can put out by just you pushing on the gas. Right? And so people who are really into trucks and hauling stuff or taking off really fast on a car care about horsepower. It's not really something you should worry about if you're not hauling something or driving a race car. So I tell people, don't worry about that number, and if it's important, it's not.
We often hear so many times that we shouldn't use our cell phone while we are fueling our vehicle. Is that important to follow?
What was the question again? Not to use our cell phone.
Not to use our cell phone while we are filling up our car.
Yes. I don't think that that's an issue. People said that it would be a spark. You cause sparks or something from your cell phone. But it's usually that cause people from smoking will cause it to happen. Or if you're filling up a gas, one of those portable gas tanks of orange plastic cans, and you put it on the back of a truck or the back of your car instead of on the ground, so you're not grounded. You have like a static shock. Like just sitting in your car and rubbing your feet on the carpet and touching the side of your car, you should touch the side of your car, they say, metal to ground you. That will cause like a spark more than your cell phone will. So, yeah, that's not something I would be too concerned with.
What do you think of these self-driving automobiles?
I have been in one that could parallel park itself, and it was kind of creepy.
Oh, really?
The steering wheel turned, and I couldn't touch it, right? It was really, really creepy at first, but it's cool. I think it's going to become the norm. It's still 10, maybe 15, 20 years out before we really start seeing them on the road. We'll probably see them more on the road in terms of massive transportation and individual cars, but I think it's going to be the way of the future, and we're just going to eventually change our thinking on it.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, while you all are thinking, another question. Windshield wipers seem to be so susceptible to the weather and the heat. Sometimes they're cracking when it gets too cold, or they are not as efficient when it's very hot or warm. Can you tell us about windshield wipers and how often we should change them?
Well, you definitely want to, after every like major season, so after summer, check them, and then after winter, check them after the really harsh seasons. They probably need to be replaced about every 6 months.
Okay.
And really after winter, because that's really harsh on windshield wipers. And if you notice that they're not ripping or tearing apart from the wiper, right, but they're not doing as great of a job of distributing the water off of the windshield, rub a nail file up and down. It cleans off the dirt and kind of roughens up the surface again, and it'll kind of renew it for a couple more months for you.
Wow, that's helpful.
It's a trick.
That's helpful. Yeah. Well, we are really just about out of time. I don't know if anyone has a real quick question to pose. And if not, then I would like to really say thank you. We really appreciate you sharing your expertise and your knowledge. Thanks to Patrice Banks, author of Girls Auto Clinic Glove Box Guide. It is a comprehensive, indispensable guide for everyone who maintains an automobile. So again, thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with 411 Team. To my listening audience, much appreciation for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.